rocking around the Christmas tree.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
Tired of an endless loop of pop Christmas music? Coming December 24th, sacred music for the Christmas season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Serenity. Stability. Solemnity. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the Christmas season, coming Christmas Eve at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
History of Muslims in America?
There were Muslims on Columbus's ship and traveling with explorers all around the New World. Up to a third of all enslaved peoples were Muslim, and the White House was built by enslaved peoples. So it's reasonable to expect Muslims helped build the White House. And Thomas Jefferson was also hosting dinners at the end of Ramadan for Muslim diplomats in the White House.
Wow.
Jefferson once said that he knows the American experiment is a success when we can get a Muslim as a president.
That's an excerpt from an op-ed video for the New York Times titled The Secret History of Muslims in the U.S. It makes a lot of claims, and one wonders why it is that this history is either not being promulgated or it's being portrayed as the secret history of Muslims. How much of it is actually accurate? If we're going to talk about a secret history or a history for that matter, it should be accurate. We're going to explore that question for the next few minutes of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Alvin Schmidt joins us. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of several books, including The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam, and The Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me again.
If you had to pick one element of this op-ed video in the New York Times that was perhaps most egregiously misleading, what do you think it would be?
Well, there are a number of them, but I would say probably the most egregious is the fact of indicating that the Statue of Liberty basically was sort of inspired by the fact of a Muslim woman. Basically, when there's absolutely no evidence that for them to say that distorts a great deal of history. Back in the 1860s, when the Suez Canal was constructed and finally finished in 1869, a French architect, artist, etc., by the name of Frederick Bartholdi, proposed to the Egyptian government his admiration for Egyptian culture and so on and so forth, that he proposed a lighthouse that would portray a veiled Muslim woman. That, of course, was not accepted by the Egyptian government. In fact, then a few years later, he began to think about complimenting the United States relative to the fact that the French helped the Americans win the War of Independence. Everybody pretty much knows that. And that somehow a connection could be made, and the French involvement and French and thanking the Americans for having attained independence. He proposed what eventually ended up becoming the Statue of Liberty. But the fact that he was turned down to build the lighthouse in Egypt with a Muslim woman has no connection to the fact when he began to propose the lighthouse, if you will, the Statue of Liberty, that he would design that likewise in terms of a Muslim woman. There's absolutely no connection to that whatsoever. And that's perhaps the most egregious kind of error. And then when it was finally accepted, they built it in France in 1884, they brought it over to 1886, and then erected it where it is now basically by Ellis Island there. And so the Statue of Liberty has absolutely no resemblance to the idea of what Bartholdi initially wanted to do for Egypt. The only similarity would be, if you can call it that, that in each case he had proposed a woman, but there was no Muslim woman proposed in terms of the design for the Statue of Liberty that ended up coming to New York.
What about the claim with that was made in the video with respect to the U.S. Marine Corps, and this is very early in U.S. history, and the connection to the Marine Corps' battle hymn mentioning Tripoli that is located today in Libya. How do you think that history was told there?
Well, that history is all distorted, too, because that takes us back to the Barbary Wars that finally came about and basically ended during Jefferson's presidency when they, for example, for a number of years, the Muslim pirates in the Mediterranean were capturing ships and charging them prohibitive prices for them to be able to continue their voyage with commercial transport. And then finally, Jefferson sent the American Marines onto the ship, the Philadelphia there, set it on fire, and left it unscathed as far as the Americans are concerned. And then a little bit later at the port of Tripoli, the American Marines were very much involved again in establishing their independence and no longer permitting the Muslim pirates to basically make hostages out of them and so forth. And so we have, for example, in the American Marines, the song, the tune, "From the Shores of Mount Azuma to the Shores of Tripoli." This all goes back to the Barbary Wars, for example, again, where there was a conflict between the Muslims and Jefferson. And Jefferson is the one who finally took the bull by the horn, so to speak, and stopped the nonsense, whereas previous to him, even George Washington was paying a lot of money so that the Americans could proceed their trade voyages in the Mediterranean, and he paid the Muslims. Well, Jefferson finally stopped it. So that's another wrinkle there that is not clearly explained. In fact, not at all really in terms of giving credit to the United States and showing the Muslim piracy that was operative, and they were peaceful individuals, as we often hear today. And that was another example.
Another time Jefferson is mentioned in that secret history of Muslims in the U.S. is that it was claimed that while President Jefferson was observing, in some sense, Ramadan with Muslim ambassadors and opining about the future of a Muslim president of the United States.
Yeah, that is so off the wall that that's all one needs to say. There's absolutely no historical evidence. This is an example. You know, a lot of this, what we've been seeing in recent years, for example, relative to Islam, surfaced with the era of political correctness in the 1970s. Muslims weren't discussed at that time. At that time, it was there were all kinds of mythological articles and written of how many great things came out of Africa in terms of Africans having been a great boon to Western culture. Again, a lot of that was mentioned, well, in terms of what has been called feel-good history, to make certain ethnic groups feel good. And then, of course, since 9/11 happened, we've been doing the same thing now in terms of political correctness for Muslims, to say things that make the Muslim feel good but are historically fictional. In other words, fake history, if you will. And likewise, for example, the article refers to the first Muslim mosque that happened in Ross, North Dakota. That phenomenon has interested me for some time, and I did my research on writing the book for The Great Divide. I looked into that. Ross, North Dakota is a little town of 108 people today. The highest population it ever had was 167 in 1960. And the Muslims, we don't know how many, there were obviously not very many, went out to North Dakota basically to take advantage of the Homestead Act that was passed back in Lincoln's day in 1862 that made land relatively cheap available that you could buy. It helped expand the agricultural west, so to speak. So some Muslims went to Ross, North Dakota, which is about 340 miles west of Fargo in northwest North Dakota. And They built a small mosque in 1929, but it soon deteriorated and finally was taken down. And then in 2005, they rebuilt not the mosque, but a replica of it. It's only less than, well, it's what, 10, roughly 10 by 10, in other words, 100 square feet, a little over 100 square feet, a little replica. You might call it a memorial, if you will, that's been built in 2005. And it was another interesting thing that the article didn't mention. The Muslims that came to Ross, North Dakota, basically eventually assimilated. In fact, I have talked to individuals about the Muslims at one time. They intermarried for the most part with Lutherans because North Dakota had a lot of Lutherans. In fact, Ross, North Dakota is such a small little town of just over a little 100 people, has only one church, and it happens to be an ELCA church. And it's the only one in existence, and so they assimilated, they married Lutherans for the most part, and basically lost their identity. This is another thing we don't hear, for example, that Muslims have assimilated, and today, of course, they are told not to assimilate, because, again, we go back to multiculturalism, where we tell people they should not assimilate, no matter where they come from, whether they come from Mexico or Honduras or wherever they are, they should retain their own culture. Well, in those days, we didn't have that. In fact, you were supposed to assimilate. We operated with the concept of a melting pot. But in the 1970s, with political correctness, we have despised the melting pot and have tried to create a salad bowl. In other words, where people do not assimilate, they each keep their cultural identity. And hence, as a result of that, we are basically moving away from what made the United States great once, namely a melting pot. And so that's what happened in North Dakota. And it also mentions another fact of the Muslim mosque in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which is today seen as the oldest building that once housed the mosque. It still exists in Cedar Rapids, but it's basically a heritage cultural center today. But those are the two examples of that they kind of balloon in that article to make it appear that Muslims have had, well, they use the expression, tightly woven into American life. Hardly woven into American life. In fact, until 9/11 happened, very little was known and recognized by Muslims in terms of having made any kind of contribution to the American culture. In fact, if one asked the question, can you please tell me what contributions really distinctly have a Muslim heritage that we can see? Well, you can't find any. The fact that they build a mosque here and there is not necessarily part of American culture any more than of all the other religious buildings we have in this country, not necessarily a part of the culture. They are in the culture, but not necessarily woven into the culture. And so that's another comment that I think that's necessary to make.
There also is a vague claim about the contribution of Muslim architecture to American architecture. It just kind of very quickly implied that there are buildings all over the country that have been deeply influenced by Muslim architecture.
Yeah, and there's another flaw in the contributions that they made, for example, to architecture. One has to quickly ask where. Most of the architectural edifices that we've had that pertain to, for example, what you find in Washington relative to the Washington Monument, or relative to the other examples that we have, basically, and the structure of the Capitol building, whether it's on the state capitol or the national capitol, most of them reflect a Greek architecture way back before the birth of Christ, even. Nothing there that resembles Muslim architecture. You find some of that in Spain, of course, where Muslims had an 800-year presence, but you don't find it in this country.
Then how should we understand kind of the general thrust of this video to say that this is a history that you haven't been told about here are some of the points where Muslims have this secret history in the United States. With about 2 minutes, how would you respond to that?
Well, in 2006, there was a presentation made in New York State, and it was called 1001 contributions, for example, that Muslims made. First of all, there weren't 1001. And really what then happened, it then received two major corrections. Errors were corrected as a result of an individual by the name of Edward Rothstein, a artist, and he basically published criticisms indicating, for example, that the first presentation in 2006 was written with errors, all again basically to make Islam look good or look what it never really was in this country or anywhere else. So that's about the response I would have to say, that the initial presentation and this article basically reflects a lot of the early errors that appeared in 2006. But then later, if you go to the library, you can find 1001 Islam contributions. You will find, for example, the third edition now. The first two editions apparently are not even available anymore because those are written with error.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He is author of several books, including The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam, and The Triumph of the West. You can purchase it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Folks, please help us defend the faith and teach the truth in 2019 by making a year-end tax-deductible donation. Any size gift is deeply appreciated. You can contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues, etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. With 2 weeks left in the year, we're $36,000 short of projected expenses. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping Issues, etc. in mind as you consider your year-end giving. In Hour 2 of Issues, etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, the issue of gender identity and transgenderism has quickly swept over much of our society's institutions, shaping them, reshaping them, in some cases redefining them, and in some cases eliminating them. And the church is no exception. How does the church respond to the ideas behind transgenderism and gender identity? How does the church apply law and gospel to those who have gender dysphoria and believe that the only option they have is to pursue it all the way to sexual transition, or those who are struggling against those temptations? We'll answer some of those questions with Pastor Matthew Worm right after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Thank you for donating almost $70,000 to Issues Etc. in the past 3 weeks. With 2 weeks left in 2018, we're $35,000 short of projected expenses. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift online at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of Issues Etc. at the end of the year.
Lord, help us ever to retain the catechism's doctrine plain.
What makes a church unique? Perhaps we should ask, what makes a church faithful? Calvary Lutheran Church of Elgin, Illinois, continually learns Christ's doctrine, simply explained in the Small Catechism. This doctrine teaches us Christ crucified, who even today comes and serves his baptized children in word and sacrament to forgive, strengthen, and teach us for daily life. This, Christ's own work among us, makes and keeps Calvary Lutheran Church faithful. Visit us at clce.org.
Jesus is the reason for the season. How often do we hear that this time of year? But what if just for a moment we shifted our focus away from the holly jolly holiday season and simply said, Jesus is the reason, period. Join John Kleinig, Heidi Sias, and others as they explore the great and wondrous mystery of Christ's incarnation in the December issue of The Lutheran Witness. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness. Interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
This Christmas, bring your family and friends to experience a reenactment of the Christmas story and Journey to the Manger, an interactive Christmas experience.
Enjoy a live nativity, warm drinks and cookies, and live music performed by student groups.
From 5 to 8 p.m. on December 21st, come to Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, to enjoy this Christmas experience for all ages.
Admission is free, and when you donate $25 or more, you'll also receive a custom piece of art made by our students.
For more information,
call 618-656-0043.
Merry Christmas! St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri, is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.